Hello and welcome to this episode of Triggered and True featuring renowned emotional health consultant, Laura Dunkett. Thank you for being here and thank you for investing the time to learn how to take care of your soul. If this podcast sparks any questions, feel free to submit a question by going to triggeredandtrue.com, scrolling to the bottom of the page and clicking ask. If you would like to learn more about Laura Dunkett, we encourage you to follow Laura on Instagram and Facebook. Also, a great resource for you to consider is the Compassion Method Master Course. This course is a deep dive into Laura's life work, the Compassion Method. The Compassion Method is a process that empowers you to learn to see and comfort your internal pain and to discover your true self, that beautiful, wonderful part of you that has been there all along, but has simply been covered up. To obtain the Master Course, go to compassionmethod.net. And as a podcast listener, you qualify for a $50 discount that can be obtained by typing in the coupon code podcast50. Again, that's compassionmethod.net, coupon code podcast50. We hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome everyone to this episode of Triggered and True. This is our fifth episode in our series, our long-running series that we don't really know how long it's going to run for, but we're just going to keep going, right, Laura?
Yep, it sounds good.
All right. So the title of today's podcast is The 10 Gifts. So it's something I'm very excited to share with everyone, and I'm sure Laura is too. But before I get into that, I wanted to give just a real quick little recap of where we've been and kind of what we're talking about in case you're just jumping in new to this series. So my name is Brian Frizzi, and I've been talking to Laura Dunkett, who is a renowned emotional health consultant in Redding, California. And we've been talking about something Laura developed over time called the Compassion Method. And I painstakingly tried to reduce the Compassion Method to one sentence. So we'll see how well I did. I define it as, from everything I've learned from Laura, as a process designed to help a person know and love their true self. Is that too simple, Laura?
Nope, it's perfect. It should be simple.
And we've been talking a lot about this method of learning and discovering who you truly are, which is a lot the title of the podcast, Triggered and True. We're talking about the difference between our triggered self, which is essentially how we act when we're stuck in our pain. Kind of our fight or flight kicks in and we're not operating out of our adult logical brain, our true self. We've been differentiating between the triggered self and the true self. And obviously we've also been talking about triggers. I define a trigger, according to Laura, as an emotional allergic reaction, something that our brain, kind of our body kind of kicks into as a survival mechanism. Why don't you give your definition of a trigger that you share oftentimes in your workshops and with the people you work with?
My definition of a trigger is it's an irrational response to a rational or irrational circumstance or person. And why I differentiate that is sometimes if our outward world feels like it's really big and we have a big emotional response, which is a trigger, then we feel justified in it. But regardless of your external world, we want our internal world to be able to be at peace, even if we have circumstances that feel big enough to have a reaction to.
One of the other podcasts we have kind of took off from that, shame versus identity. And a lot of people kind of get stuck there. They start to think their triggered self, how they act when they're hurting is who they really are. And that's obviously a lot of shame comes along with that.
Definitely.
And we spend a lot of time talking about how that's not who you really are. Mm-hmm. And then the last episode, we introduced the X factor, if you will, the healing agent, I guess, of this whole process, which is compassion, hence the name Compassion Method. And we talked a lot about that. And one of the things that we were very painstakingly trying to do, and we still are trying to do, is to not reduce this to a formula. Because compassion has a substance to it. It's something, it's like a balm. You compare it to like a balm that you put on a, something that's hurting, like if you strain a muscle or something like that. And if we reduce this to a formula, compassion goes out the window. We just become a project. The person we're helping, or if we're trying to help ourselves through the compassion method, we just become a project, just kind of another thing to do. And we want to and especially with what we're going to talk about today, we want to make sure that people don't just grab a hold of this as just a tool in their toolbox type thing. It's so much more than that. So anything you want to add on that, Laura?
No, I agree with you. I just think a lot of times when I meet with people, they're coming to me because they feel like they are their triggered self, like you said, that they are the problem that needs to be fixed. And whenever anyone sits across from me, I always communicate that we're not there. We're not meeting together for them to be changed or fixed, because it has to be about relationship with self. Any inner healing, any emotional awareness you have needs to be in a relationship with yourself, not just trying to get fixed or be better.
So pain. We've been talking a lot about pain, and we talk about pain. Pain is what causes us to trigger and operate out of our triggered self, not our true self. So why don't you just spend a little time talking about where this pain that we've been discussing is coming from? What's the source?
So the source of that pain is 0 to 12 years old is the pain that you've experienced. And that pain is two different things cause us to trigger. It's our pain we've experienced, but also our lack. And so the two reasons we trigger is pain or unmet need. And so pain doesn't just come from how we were treated in our early childhood development. It also comes from our unmet need. And a lot of times people feel like pain is bigger than our unmet need. But over the course of this process, I've been able to see that our unmet need is our fullness, is our lack. And when we get our needs met, that's our fullness. And if you're in a full place and you experience pain, you're not going to have as much of a reaction to it, because that fullness allows you to still be able to be at peace even when you've experienced pain.
Now, you often say that getting your needs met is more important than fixing pain. So I imagine when most people come to you, they're hurting and they're like, just make it go away.
Yeah.
And that actually could be to their detriment, because you could just help them make it go away. And a lot of people have a lot of strategies and mechanisms to take care of themselves that just make the pain go away. But why is that not really helping them?
Well, because if you're not having the experience of getting your needs met, and you're only trying to take care of the pain, ultimately that's a form of medication. So we're just trying to medicate our pain, but that means that our heart is not full. Our heart hasn't actually received those needs, which is actually an experience. It's not just, I have a met need, meet the need, check the box. It's, I have a met need and I need the experience of actually getting my needs met that I didn't experience in my early childhood development. A lot of times people just kind of almost want, like, you know, you're saying, just like make the pain go away, almost like a pill. And I've even had people joke around and say, I wish you could just give me a pill and then it would all be better. And I actually say, I wouldn't want that for you. Because if we just took a pill, we got rid of the pain, but we didn't actually get loved, cared for. The 10 gifts we're going to talk about today are those unmet needs being met in a tangible way. So what you'd have is a lack of pain, but the absence of pain is not the presence of love. And if our primary goal is to get rid of our pain, we're not actually getting our heart full of love, then really we're still going to feel empty, lonely, sad, scared. We're still actually going to be in pain, even though we've medicated it by trying to find a solution. I feel like that's what a lot of people do when they're trying to get healed. I think that that becomes their goal. And so it's just feel pain, get rid of pain, feel pain, get rid of pain, but not actually receiving love.
You know, and I think you mentioned the word medication, which can come in a lot of different forms. It can be, you know, a pharmaceutical, or it can be all kinds of other things that we do to take care of ourselves. And the medication is really more of a bridge. You know, it's not the ultimate healing agent, and that medication's meant to be a bridge to help you. And sometimes that medication is compassion.
Yeah, that's so true.
But it's leading us somewhere.
Exactly.
We don't want to stop there. That's kind of the point you're trying to make, correct?
Yeah. And I love that you brought that up, because, you know, true medication, I'm thinking kind of, you know, antidepressants or anti-anxiety or something along those lines, there can be a lot of shame connected to that. And like you just said, I think that's great that it really is a beginning place of compassion to do what you need to do in that moment to actually be able to receive love. When we're in a highly triggered state and we're in that fight or flight mechanism in our brain on a constant level, a constant basis, what ends up happening is we can't even get to getting our needs met because that pain is actually blocking us. So when we do have a medication, or if we do something temporarily, I always like to say those are like temporary boundaries. They're temporary things that we put into place to be able to take care of ourselves. But we only want to, like you said, begin there. And then from there, be able to have the ability to receive love.
Yeah. And I think what we tend to do is we fixate, you know, especially, you know, I'm thinking in terms of just my own walk when I started to, you know, get more serious about faith and some of those things. I looked at some of the things that I did to take care of myself as being, you know, I was very ashamed of them. You know, I was like excessive drinking, partying, things I was doing to take care of myself, I was very much ashamed of. But yet, now I can look back at that with compassion and see it. That was the best I knew to take care of myself at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, I didn't know anything else. Mm-hmm. And I think God understands that as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I even walk people through a process of thanking their anxiety or thanking their depression or thanking the thing that triggered inside of them that was letting them know that they had pain and unmet need. Because really, it's like your check engine light or an indicator that's telling you, hey, we have pain, we have lack. And if we don't have that anxiety coming up or that depression coming up or having those reactions come up, a lot of times we don't even realize we have pain underneath the surface.
And ultimately, you would say that pain is there because of these unmet needs. Now, a lot of people would argue with you and say that pain's there because somebody did something or some other reason why that pain is there. Do you want to just kind of elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'd kind of say it a little bit differently. And I'd say that it's the pain's there because we haven't gotten our need met. And if we had our need met, then that pain, that indicator wouldn't keep blaring to us. So it's kind of, it's telling us that that's what we need. And when someone does something to us, I talk a lot about blame-free and being able to take care of your inner world so you don't have to blame your external world or other people for what's going on inside of you. And a lot of times that's what we end up doing is we're blaming a person, even if they, you know, even if it's true that that person did hurt you and they did cause you pain, we don't want to minimize, you know, what you've gone through. But we also want to say, if your heart is full, if you have the 10 gifts, if you have your needs met, even if somebody treats you badly, it's not going to have the same impact as it would if you didn't have those gifts being met, those needs being met.
I think one of the things I look at it from talking to you is that it seems less high stakes.
Mm-hmm.
So when that need's not met, let's just think of something real practical, maybe around parenting. So we think, oh, we need our children to do X and then we'll be okay.
Yeah.
But the beauty of this is that when you realize you can be okay, even if your child doesn't do X,
mm-hmm.
you'd still like them to do X, obviously.
Yeah.
You still really would. And I keep thinking to the workshop that I was at where the gentleman was giving the example of his kid taking the garbage out and he was really trying to get you to come up with some way to teach him or to show him to trick his kid or coerce his kid into taking the garbage out. But that's not where you were going. You were trying to help him figure out what that was pressing on.
Yeah,
what inside
exactly.
of him was that pressing on, mm-hmm. and that he could be okay even if the kid didn't take the garbage out.
Yeah, exactly. And in those moments, because parenting a lot of times feels like high stakes moments, like you used that example before, it does feel like if I can get this child to take out the trash, I'm going to be okay. And the beautiful thing about when your heart is taken care of, that you can be okay even if your child doesn't take out the trash. And that's such an important thing to do and a place to be in, because you can't control anyone. You can't control your children. You can't control anyone. So if your peace and your well-being is contingent on their behavior, you're going to spend your whole entire life trying to get your world to do what it needs to do for you to be okay. And it's impossible.
Well, and that's why it feels so high stakes, because you're like, if they don't do it, I can't be okay. But the beauty of the compassion method is that we're all learning that mm-hmm. we can be okay even when it's not okay all around
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
Yep. And also I think the powerful thing with that is when we can stay connected to our true self, we can bring really more innovative ideas mm-hmm. and more creative ideas on how to help people you know, do the things they're supposed to do.
Yeah, or exactly.
Do the tasks that they're supposed to do and come up with creative consequences, not just fits of rage and yelling and screaming and grumpiness.
Exactly. Just not trying to have a behavior change, actually trying to get to what's going on behind why your child doesn't take out the trash in the first place.
Well, you have developed a list of these needs, but you don't call them needs, and you call them something different. You call them the 10 gifts.
Yeah.
So why do you call them? We've been talking about them in terms of needs because they're definitely things that we need. Mm-hmm. These lists of things that you're going to share, but you like to call them gifts. Why is that?
Like I mentioned before, 0 to 12 years old is where we experience our pain that affects us for the rest of our life. But it also is where we either received or didn't receive our emotional needs. And so when I say gift, it's saying that we needed someone to give to us these certain characteristics, these certain emotional needs in order for our need to be met. So if I just said that these are just needs without the gift being given, it would take away from the fact that it's not just, again, we're trying to change or fix or medicate. We're actually trying to receive a gift. And one of the things I always say when we go through this list is put the word unconditional in front of it. And that also to me implies it's a gift. It's unconditional. You didn't receive this gift. You didn't get this need met because of your own merit or something that you did. It's caregivers or people in your life that are giving you these gifts so that you will be able to be full. So it's an offensive approach instead of a defensive approach.
No, that's really good. And I kind of remember that really well, that offensive versus defensive, because when I first met you, I was on the defensive. And I'm guessing that most people, is it all people? Have you ever met anybody that was ready to go on offense day one?
No, usually no, because, you know, people are in pain, you know, they've been in their triggered self for some duration of time. And so they just want it to be done, even if it's not really high triggers, because, you know, when we first started meeting, you were more in a higher triggered place because of the things you were going through personally. But even if somebody comes in and they're not in a highly triggered place, they're still trying to get that taken care of in a defensive way, as if it's a problem. And I really don't see it as being a problem. I see it as an opportunity.
I'll never forget kind of when it was several months in, and that mind shift from defense to offense of that, this isn't just something happening to me. This is something that I can grab a hold of and mm-hmm. and steer the ship. And
yeah.
That was really, really powerful. So the 10 gifts that we're going to introduce here soon, how was this list developed? Is this from a textbook somewhere, or could I find this in a textbook somewhere? Where did you get the list?
Not that I have found yet. So maybe out there somewhere. I have seen some variations where people kind of pick different ones, but how it started was I knew that I had a met need, but it was such a broad feeling. It didn't have any specifications to it. And so that broadness put me on a journey kind of to start searching it out. And I remember going, like asking people, how do you get your needs met, or what are your needs? Because it's so ambiguous when you just say I have unmet needs. And so I ended up compiling this list, not just based on even my own journey of finding out what my emotional needs were, but also when I've met with people over the last 8 years, these are the constant needs that surface when people are coming through their pain or when they're acknowledging what they didn't receive in their early childhood development. And so it's compiling these 10 these 10 characteristics as kind of the fullness of you being able to have all your emotional needs met. There's some variation. Sometimes people will say, like, I'll introduce them in a moment, but one of the gifts is to be accepted. And sometimes people will say, well, I really need belonging. But really, belonging and accepted are in the same family. And so sometimes people will say, well, you know, what if this doesn't, you know, this doesn't get on the list? One of the common things that people say is they want to be understood to be on the list. But as you'll see, we have to be seen, we have to be heard. And when we're seen and heard, we feel understood. So sometimes it's a combination of different emotional needs that will kind of meet that particular word you're looking for, that particular feeling that you're needing to experience.
And obviously framing these as gifts puts it in a much more positive light. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's being given to you. It's more focused on something being given to you versus the lack that's there.
Yeah, exactly.
So with them being gifts, then they are given to us. Where do we get them from? Where do they come from?
We were intended for us to experience these from our mom and our dad, or our caregivers. And our parents, you know, just like any parent, no matter how, you know, healthy or unhealthy a parent is, you want your kids to be able to have everything they need. But unfortunately, if my parents, my mom and dad, didn't give me the gifts I needed, I'm not going to be able to give those to my kids. And so here, that's where the lack comes in. One of the exercises I have people do when I'm walking them through the 10 gifts is we take an inventory, which we're going to kind of go through in a moment. But what I usually have people do as we're going through that inventory is, if any of the gifts were given to them in their early childhood development, I have them thank their mom and thank their dad for giving them that gift. You know, a lot of times, if there's 10 gifts, let's say a parent was only able to give us one or two of those gifts, that lack of those other eight or nine makes us feel like we just want to throw it all out, like our parents gave us nothing. But there's something really valuable about being able to acknowledge what we did receive, so that we can see that even if we got one of those gifts, it's going to impact our lives in such a powerful way, even though we can recognize our lack of what we didn't receive.
So if biological mom and dad were not able to give the gifts, then what?
Most people get really sad at this part. Whenever I do the workshops and we go through the inventory and they recognize, oh, wow. And some people are completely unaware. We knew that our mom and dad were supposed to give us food, and they were supposed to provide a place, a roof over our heads, and those basic needs, maybe give us a hug every once in a while. But we didn't realize that we actually had all these emotional needs. And so as we get to this part in some of the workshops I do, I can literally look out at the group and I can see people's like faces just fall, like as they're doing it. And it's part of it is really sad because they're recognizing, wow, like I didn't get these needs met. And there's this hopelessness that can kind of set in where people are like, wow, you know, I didn't get what I need. And then they start feeling like I'll never get what I need. Because if 0 to 12 years old, my biological mom and dad were not able to give this to me, then that's it. You know, I'm just going to be stuck in my lack forever. And that's why I love the 10 gifts so much, is because there's a really beautiful process of being able to receive those gifts from not just biological parents, but we have had people strategically placed in our lives that carry these gifts, even if our parents weren't able to give them to us. So we're gathering these gifts, yes, from biological parents, but we're also gathering these gifts from men and women that have been placed in our lives to be able to give us these gifts. But one of the things that gets discouraging for people is they come in unusual packages. You know, they come in the form of a coach. They come in the form of a coworker. They come in the form of a peer. They can be older than you, but they can also be a peer younger than you. And so a lot of times, if I like held up a picture of your mom, you would say, that's a mom. But if I held up a picture of your second grade teacher, you'd say second grade teacher. And it's not necessarily that your second grade teacher is your mom, but your second grade teacher carried these gifts, or some of these gifts that we were able to give to you, even though they're not your parent, but they had an influence in your life that you were able to experience these gifts in a real tangible way, a real person and a real experience that you experience them.
We want to talk a little bit more about that. We want to hit on the vivid imagination and the ability to receive these gifts. But I think it would be helpful to share what those 10 gifts are. Because if I was listening at this point, I'd be like, well, what the heck are they?
What are they? Reveal the gifts.
Yeah. So you have, with the help of a friend and an illustrator, you've put together a children's book. And in this children's book, you introduce the 10 gifts. I love the illustrations in it. So what, you want to just read through the book and
we'll do story time.
So
if you're just listening to the audio right now, I'll be able to go through each one of them, but I'd also recommend looking at the video of this that we have, just because then you can see the illustrations. But you can see this cute little book. It's You Are Loved. And we're able to put this book together based on, I did a podcast of the 10 gifts. And Lauren, who's the illustrator, she was able to capture the message by hearing it. And she wanted to do illustrations to be able to not just take the words that you're saying, because these gifts are more than just words. You know, it can actually be pretty flat to just say, you know, did your mom and your dad see you? But I'll show you as I open this up. When you look at it, I see you. So when you see that picture of that lion and that little boy and just that face-to-face, eye-to-eye contact, the body language of it, you can feel the feeling of, I see you. The next gift is, I hear you. And so you see again that rapt attention of that really sweet bear, of just that parent looking at that child is animatedly sharing, I hear you. I accept you. I like this one. I think it's really cute.
Yeah.
The little dad that's teaching the child, such a valuable gift. I play with you. I always kind of thought play was lower on the list because it felt like the other ones were more important, but play, especially in early childhood development, is extremely important. I protect you. I provide for you. I value you. I show you affection. And lastly, you are enough and I love you. So I'll just verbally say them just one more time just for you to be able to hear each of them. There, I see you, I hear you, I accept you, I play with you, I teach you, I protect you, I provide for you, I show you affection, you're valuable, and you are enough.
So you mentioned an inventory. So the inventory is something, practically speaking, that someone could take from this podcast and go do. So you want to explain that?
Yeah, so we do an inventory, and a lot of times the reason why I say inventory is I like to take a little bit of like the emotional charge behind it. You know how I just said how sometimes people go through the inventory and they'll feel a lot of emotions connected to it. But I use the word inventory because I really want people to be able to ask themselves. I usually have people ask themselves, give one of four answers. Did your mom see you? And remember, this is 0 to 12 years old, because that's where you needed to be able to receive these gifts to be able to have them be part of your early childhood development. And so let's say, did your mom see you? Or did your dad see you? Or did both or neither? And it's really important that we recognize that our mom and our dad both have to give to us. Sometimes we have a really great mom or a really great dad, but the other parent wasn't present or wasn't able to give us these gifts. But there's when a mom sees you and a dad sees you, you experience it differently. And the combination of a mom and a dad seeing you is the completion of that gift being given to you.
So after a person's done the inventory,
yeah,
and they have that moment of, honestly, it's kind of a moment of grief. There's probably elements of that when they recognize that. And one thing I just want to say too, is that there would be a temptation maybe in some cases to blame, or maybe even probably one of two directions. You can either blame your parents or you defend them. Well, you know, the reality is that I believe all of our parents were doing the best they could with what they had to work with. So if that gift didn't live inside of our parent, they didn't have it to give. And then as a parent myself, I could see the things that I wasn't able to pass to my children in that 0 to 12 zone. And I guess being a parent really prevents me from any amount of blame, because I can see where I was unable to do it as well, but also able to have compassion for myself and understanding of, I didn't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so we want to start there by saying they did the best they could, because they did. We did. I'm a parent as well. We both are trying to do the best we can, but we don't want to stop there. You know, we want to start there by recognizing that, because that is the truth. But if we stop there, that actually is where I got stuck, because I did have good parents 0 to 12 years old. And so I felt like, you know, I couldn't even actually get my needs met because they tried the best they could. So when a gift would be presented and they couldn't give it to me, I didn't even want to acknowledge it, because then I felt like I was villainizing them or blaming them. And I knew they didn't have it to give me. And so sometimes I like to use the example of, did your mom and your dad teach you Spanish? Because it doesn't have an emotional charge to it. It's yes or no. It's not that they were a good parent because they taught you Spanish and they were a bad parent because they didn't teach you Spanish. They either did or they didn't. And we can make it a little bit more matter of fact. It helps us to do sometimes a more honest inventory. Because for example, if you worked at a coffee shop and you were going into the storage room and you were doing inventory and you said, we have coffee, but you didn't have coffee, it would create a big mess. And so we want to make sure that the inventory is our honest inventory. And another thing that I tell people often is sometimes people will say, well, yeah, my mom and dad, they saw me. And I'll say, well, do you feel seen as an adult? And they'll be like, no, not at all. And so that's another indicator if we received it or didn't, because it doesn't mean that our parent didn't ever see us. But what has to happen, especially in that early developmental stage, is it has to happen repeatedly and consistently so that we are very sure within ourselves that we were seen. And so that's another way you can take inventory, is recognizing how you experience these gifts as an adult.
So if we've done the inventory, we don't want to stop there, as you said, then where do we go? Where do we go forward? So let's say we've identified a gift that we don't feel we received. Then what?
From that place, now we want to actually go to our pain. Similarly to when I walk people through pain or unmet need, you're gonna experience pain of not having that need met. So we want to identify 0 to 12 years old. Where do we have the cognitive awareness that we didn't receive this gift? So for example, if I was picking the gift of protection, I'd go 0 to 12 years old and I'd find a time that I didn't feel protected, because we actually want it to be a real experience, not just an abstract, ambiguous, I didn't feel protected, but actually an experience. And sometimes we have one memory where we feel that. Sometimes it's just an overall feeling we had for a certain range of time, And so what we'll do is we will then go to that time. So let's just say at 5 years old, I didn't feel like I was protected. Then what I'm going to do is now I get the opportunity to search through my whole entire life to find a man and a woman that are real people in my life that I've had real experiences with, to be able to give to that 5-year old part of my brain. When I was first, learning about child self, and I've talked a little bit about this in other past episodes, but have we talked about the child self?
We touched on it.
Yeah, we haven't gotten real detailed, so we'll probably have to dive into that a little bit more. But the child self is being able to go back to that time in order to be able to bring those people, and I like to say to almost that file in our brain, like our brain is a computer. And if at 5 years old, I didn't receive protection, that file in my brain is lacking. So now I'm finding a real person, and I'll talk real briefly about vivid imagination like you mentioned before. So if I just imagined a random man or a random woman coming and feeling protected by them, and let's just say even for a movie, for example, like it's going to be touching and I can imagine what it would be like, but vivid imagination is having real people and real experiences being reapplied to that 5-year-old part of my brain. So let's just say, for example, that I had experienced that kind of love when I was like in my 20s. If I experience that love in my 20s, that's great. And I'm going to be really thankful for those people in my life that were able to give me the gift of protection as an adult. But it's not going to impact me to the degree that it needs to impact me until we're actually going back to that early childhood development. So when I go back to that 5-year-old to bring protection there, I am actually picturing that man and that woman and what their body language is telling me, what their expression is telling me, what their presence is actually giving to me, because it's actually a real tangibleness to that feeling of protection.
Well, yeah, protection has substance to it. So you're feeling the substance of protection. You're letting that 5-year-old memory file feel the substance of that.
Yeah.
Which is really profound that our brain has the capability of doing that. So, the Bible says we're transformed by the renewal of our mind.
Yeah.
Paul caught on to that a lot sooner than modern science did, because science is just probably in the last 50, 60 years really grasping how our brain can be molded and changed. It's not a rigid construct. So that memory file that's lacking, it's not like it's hopeless, because you didn't get it when you're in childhood, you're explaining how you can go get it now. And that's powerful.
Yeah.
And that in of itself is a great source of hope.
Yes, it is. When you see the neurological side of it, not just even like, oh, this is my good idea. This is actually the neurological side of your neuroplasticity, which means it's your brain's moldability to be able to receive. And I don't want to get super deep into this thought, but you know, a lot of times when we've experienced pain or we've had a met need as a child, especially because we're so vulnerable, a lot of times we can ask ourselves the question, where was God? You know, why wasn't he with me in that moment? And I love the science of this process because what God was real, he was there, even if he couldn't be a tangible person to us, like these men and women that we're discovering were tangible people. He's able to actually say, I'm coming back for you. I'm leaving a back door. I've made your brain in such a way that we can come back to that moment and bring the love that you didn't have in a tangible way during that time. Because throughout the course of your life, you are going to experience love, even if you weren't able to receive it at 5 years old.
And the beautiful thing is, when you do this, you realize it was there all along.
Yeah, so yeah. True.
You realize that God was there and he did provide a way and it was there all along. And you just, because of the pain and also being wired to see, like you've explained before, that even if you're adopted and you were adopted at birth and you never knew your biological parents, and there's a part of your DNA at a cellular level that's looking towards biological mom and dad to meet those needs, so that you're almost putting up a block to your adoptive parents. You don't realize it. It's subconscious. It's at a very deep level, but
yeah. Yeah, it's definitely happening. That's a really good illustration for sure, because we want that biological parent, because that was the intention. You know, our parents were meant to have these gifts to give to us, but because they didn't receive them, they weren't able to give too much to us. But that doesn't make biological parents villains because they couldn't. It actually says that that was what was meant to be, but unfortunately we didn't receive it. So now we're going to have other people that can stand in the gap for what biological parents couldn't give us.
Well, this is really good information. And I love going through it because I learn again. So, but kind of to conclude today's episode, I'd like to give a little example of me going through this after learning it from you, because when I first, this was one of the first workshops I attended. And again, I was coming there on the defensive, wanting to get fixed. I heard this and it was kind of like, kind of felt like a lot of mumbo jumbo to me. You know, I was very practical. I was just like, yeah, it's like, you know, go tell me something, to some book to read to make me better, you know, or, you know, pill or whatever, like people talk about. So, but I thought I'm going to give this a go, because I was in a very hungry place and you came so highly recommended. So, anyway, one of the things that for me always was growing up, very small and very little and very far behind my peers in physical development, I never felt like I was enough. And unfortunately, that wasn't a gift that my parents were able to give me. So it wasn't so much, as we've talked about, that I was small and little and had that. It was that I wasn't able to be with my parents in that and kind of receive that, because obviously your physical stature doesn't dictate whether you're enough or not, you know, but actually at those ages, it sure did. So I took your advice here, you know, I did the inventory, and then I really looked at the next part, and I've grown to look at this next part more and more as a treasure hunt.
Yeah. And I like that.
It's like fun. It's like, okay, I didn't receive it here, but where have I experienced that before? I prayed about it, and very quickly on this enough one, a man came to mind that was just, it like, boom, like there he was right away. And I hadn't thought about this man in like forever, but he was a coach, and he was a coach on a softball team I was on. And again, a lot of sports oftentimes accentuated my feelings of not feeling like I'm enough, but this guy was the exact opposite. I mean, the way he spoke to me, the way he coached me, the way he corrected me, the way he encouraged me, I just always felt like I was enough on his team. And consequently, I played at a level way higher than I played on any other teams. I mean, he got more out of me by the way he treated me and the way he coached me than I was able to achieve at any other team that I was ever on. So I'll never forget playing third base and him being in the dugout And I remember one time I made a throw that was pretty decent, but he just, the way he, you know, congratulated me and encouraged me, and he just made me feel like I hung the moon, you know? So mm-hmm. I totally felt like I was enough. Part of my healing was just sitting with that memory.
Yeah.
And just sitting with that and letting the substance of that feeling permeate just the pain in my mm-hmm. soul.
Yeah.
And that's when I learned that this isn't all just mumbo jumbo. There's some there's some of this is legit. And I knew it was more than legit. I knew that this was something very profound. And you know, that's an example of me kind of going through it. But how would you encourage other people? Is the process that I walk through kind of a good place to start to just look for these people in your lives, or just maybe give some examples of some other places they can look?
You mentioned a coach, there's teachers, there's friends, parents. Sometimes they're able to give us those gifts because we have a relationship with them. If you grew up in the church, you might have had a Sunday school teacher or youth pastor or pastor, mentors, bosses from your work, coworkers, peers. There's so many different people that come into our lives and impact us that we don't really have, like I said before, eyes to see because, or heart to receive, because they don't come in the form that we thought they would come. But if you take inventory over your life, you'll be able to see that no matter how bleak or how, you know, many of these gifts you feel like you didn't receive or you didn't experience, I promise you that there are people strategically placed, like you said, a treasure hunt of people that have been placed in your life to be able to give you real, tangible gifts.
You know, and one of the ones that I found was actually a friend who was my age.
Yeah.
And this was going back into high school. And I thought, well, that doesn't make sense because I never looked at him like a dad.
Mm-hmm.
He was my age. He was a peer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think you helped me with that in helping me see that in that area of development, in that area of emotional development. And the gift was acceptance.
Yeah.
Because he was actually someone that accepted me. I felt accepted from just the way I was.
Mm-hmm.
But in that area of emotional development, I was very little.
Yeah.
And I was able to receive from him in a fatherly type of way, even though he was my age.
Yep, so. Exactly. Because you're not getting parented by them on a peer level. You're bringing that experience back in time to 0 to 12 years old, where you probably didn't even know that peer at that time. But the things that he carried, even being young and being your peer, were meant to be given to you during that developmental stage.
Absolutely. All right. So I think the overwhelming summary of today is that it's never too late.
Yeah.
And there's these gifts, there's these things that we were meant to receive in childhood. And just because the circumstances of life and sin and all these things that have corrupted humanity, we didn't receive some of those things that we were supposed to, but it's never too late.
Yeah, that's exactly true. It's never too late. Might take some time to search it out and
some
do that mining, treasure hunt.
Might take some mining.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But don't get discouraged. You will find what you need because you always had what you needed. You just didn't know it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Laura, for your depth and your insight. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today for this episode. And we wish you all the best and look forward to connecting again very soon on Triggered in Truth. Thank you again for joining us for this episode of Triggered and True. We hope that you enjoyed it. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, go to triggeredandtrue.com, scroll down to the bottom of the page, and click Ask. And if you would like to learn more about the Compassion Method, be sure to check out the Compassion Method Master Course, which can be purchased at compassionmethod.net. And as a podcast listener, you qualify for a $50 discount, which can be obtained by typing in the coupon code PODCAST50. Again, that's compassionmethod.net, coupon code PODCAST50. Thank you again. Goodbye.